Sunday, we began a study of the attributes or qualities, or Marlene and I both love the word that used to be used for this word back in the 1700s and 1800s, the perfections of God. And for Sunday school, as we looked to the book of Ezekiel, on the back of the lesson for Sunday school there, you will see these attributes again listed. I urge you to save those, keep them with you, so that we'll have those in the future, because we'll be referring to each of these. And so today, we'll be talking about the attribute of sovereignty. One thing that especially you'll note when we look at the attributes of God is that each of these is distinct. However, you can't really understand any one of them apart from the others, and each of them functions in connection with the others. A.W. Pink, a strong Calvinist theologian, wrote back in 1919 in his book, The Sovereignty of God, he wrote, "The sovereignty of God is an expression that was once generally understood. It was a phrase commonly used in religious literature. It was a theme frequently expounded in the pulpit. It was a truth which brought comfort to many hearts and gave virility and stability to Christian character. But today, to make mention of God's sovereignty is, in many quarters, to speak in an unknown tongue. Were we to announce from the average pulpit that the subject of our discourse would be the sovereignty of God, it would sound very much as though we had borrowed a phrase from one of the dead languages. Alas, that it should be so. Alas, that the doctrine which is the key to history, the interpreter of providence, the warp and woof of Scripture, and the foundation of Christian theology should be so sadly neglected and so little understood." As he says, to make mention that this is going to be your sermon, it's like telling people you're going to be speaking from a dead language. And yet that's exactly what I'm going to be doing this morning. I'm telling you this morning that my topic is the sovereignty of God, and to remember that He is in charge. So what is sovereignty? And how is sovereignty distinguished from omnipotence or all-powerfulness? Are they the same thing? How are they different? Well, my formidable task for this next half hour is to take this four-syllable word, sovereignty, or for those of us who are Southerns, we might say three syllables, sovereignty, and help us to understand what it is and explain how sovereignty is different from omnipotence. And then, on top of all that, to somehow get you to leave the service thinking that listening to this sermon for the last half hour was worth a half hour of your time. That's quite a challenge. What do we mean, then, by sovereignty? Well, we say, for example, that we live in the sovereign state of Alabama. What do we mean when we say Alabama is a sovereign state? Well, we say we consider it sovereign because we believe that no president, no Congress, and no federal judge can tell Alabama what to do. And in a sense, Alabama is a sovereign state because of the 10th Amendment, which provides that the power is not delegated to the federal government by the Constitution, or prohibited to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. There is a conflict in law between state authority versus federal authority, and that's a continuing conflict ever since the Constitutional Convention of 1787, and continues to be an issue that is wrestled with in the courts today. But R.J. Rushdoony, a fine theologian whose institutes on biblical law have been very helpful to me and to many others, Rushdoony says that no government, no human government, should be called sovereign, because sovereignty belongs only to God. human governments get their authority from their constitutions, which are enacted by their people, which in turn get the authority to rule from God himself. So only God, in the ultimate sense, is sovereign. Well, what is sovereignty then? And how is sovereignty related to omnipotence? You would think if God is all-powerful, that automatically means that he is sovereign as well. Well, you might say that there is a distinction. We've talked about that distinction in previous weeks. Distinction between power and authority. Power, we use the Greek word dunamis. Authority, the Greek word exousios. And you might say that power relates to omnipotence and sovereignty to authority. Here's one way of looking at it. Let's say that you have a military brigade. Let's say that the strongest, the most powerful person in that brigade is 6'5". He weighs 260 pounds. He has the championship in the brigade in weightlifting and boxing and wrestling and in ultimate fighting, and he's also the best marksman. People don't mess with him because he has power. But he's only a private first class. That strong man is a limited picture of omnipotence. But then let's say we have a commander. Let's say this commander is a colonel. Let's say he's nearing 60 years old. Maybe he's about 5'6", weighs maybe 160 pounds. He has some heart trouble and some kidney stones and a bad back and bad knees. A little arthritis setting in. That private could whip him in a few seconds. But he has the authority to order the private to the front lines or order the private to clean the latrines, and that private will obey immediately. Because he knows that if he doesn't, his commander can charge him in a court-martial with disobedience of a lawful order, and the commander has that authority. So the commander has authority. The strong private has power. The strong man with power is a limited version of omnipotence. The commander is a limited version of sovereignty. Sovereignty, you might say in the spiritual sense then, is God's ultimate authority and control over all creation, governing the universe according to his divine will. It means that God, as ruler of the universe, is free, and he can do whatever he wants. He is not bound by or limited by the dictates of his created beings, and there are no other beings other than those whom he has created. Think about Daniel, and we'll be looking at Daniel in our Bible study next Sunday morning, but in Daniel chapter 2, you recall that King Nebuchadnezzar has had a dream, and he calls out his royal cabinet, who are the best educated, the most brilliant men of the time, the magicians, the sorcerers, you might say the secretary of sorcery, and the secretary of fortune telling, and the secretary of magic, and so on. And none of them can interpret the dream. But God gives Daniel the interpretation, and so Daniel shares that interpretation with King Nebuchadnezzar. And so Nebuchadnezzar says in chapter 2, verse 47, "Of a truth it is that your God is a God of gods and the Lord of kings and a revealer of secrets, seeing that thou couldst reveal this secret." What he has recognized here is that God, this God that these Hebrews believe in, he's a pretty powerful God. He's important. But he hasn't come yet to realize that God is truly sovereign. And then in chapter 3, we read where Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego refuse to bow before the image that Nebuchadnezzar has set up. And when they are threatened with being sent to the fiery furnace for refusing to bow to this image, for obeying God rather than man, remember their answer in verse 17 of chapter 3? "If it be so, Our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thine hand, O king. But if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. Verse 17, if it be so, our God is able to deliver us. He's able. That's referring to his omnipotence. We know he's able to deliver us. But is he willing to deliver us? That they don't know for sure. Some people think they have promises from God that God hasn't given them. And then they get disillusioned with God when they end up in the fiery furnace, or the jail door clinks behind them, or they're fired from the job for taking a stand that they thought God would sustain them in. What they don't realize is that they're claiming a promise from God that God hasn't given them. They know God is able to deliver them, but is he willing to deliver them? Maybe he is, they believe he is, but they say, but if not, we will still obey God. You might say then that omnipotence refers to ability to deliver. Sovereignty refers to willingness to deliver. As of this point, Nebuchadnezzar